Hello, listeners. Welcome to Startup Kitchen Talk, where we discuss startup apprentices becoming master chefs. My today guest is a twin of Chapek's best creation, Maggie Mejdrechová, the co-founder and CTO of Startup Robotvin. Welcome.
Hello.
You work with robots. Do you also bring them home?
I'm actually a very minimalistic person in my private life. So I think that I enjoy playing with all the tech stuff at work, and then at home I prefer keep it simple and very.
So you have an analog household, you want to say?
Like my watch, for example.
Oh yeah, true.
Just analog. I'm not really into much gathering data about myself and everything. Mm-hmm. But robotic vacuum cleaner, that's our best friend at home.
Yeah, that's one of the best creation ever. You have experiences in tech industry 10 plus years, right? So what is easier, dealing with people or dealing with robots?
Yeah, happens very often. You have tough moments dealing with people, and at the end of something tough, I'm trying to make it a little lighter, and yeah, that's why we work with robots, right? So yeah, both has some difficult parts, but I actually enjoy that. If you work a co-founder of a tech company, you need to combine the both, and it's a skill that I'm really enjoying mastering, so it's part of my
the co-foundering, the partnership.
Yeah, and the partners and customers and investors. It's tech is not just the tech, but also how people accept it and how people take it as theirs. So the psychology of the tech is also super important part of the
It is very nice to have a tech founder who also likes people. After studying mechanical engineering, you continue with mechatronics. What is it and why does it sound like Transformers?
Yeah, it sounds great, right?
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I decided for that. But how the world was built, the area is a combination of mechanics, electronics and cybernetics.
Amazing.
And they took the words and made one out of it. So that's why it's mechatronics, mechanical and electronics and cybernetics together. So it's basically really studies that help you to learn not just the specialized skills, but they teach you how to build systems, because each system is complex. There's mechanics, there's electronics, mm-hmm. and all the things hold together with some piece of software. So we were always taught the example, the most mechatronics thing in that surrounds us is a car.
A string theory in physics, this is for mechanics, electronics.
Yeah, and it makes perfect sense, because really each system is kind of a combination, and the more mm-hmm. tech we have around us, the more complex the systems are. So it made very much sense for me to study it as a system with all the components that are involved.
For the Transformers, in my defense, those robotic arms kind of do look Transformer-like. So what does robotic do with this Transformers robotic arms?
Yeah, it's actually funny. This, the model of the robotic arm is very old. And mm-hmm. it didn't really evolve much over
how,
the
how
time.
How old are we talking?
I think it's 1940 or something like that. But the robots, really the robotic arms, they basically look all the same throughout all the factories, different different applications you can look at in the industry. It's always this mechanism with the robotic arm. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is it's not just a coincidence, but it's a result of the math that is behind the machine. So the math that describes the thing somehow holds when the thing looks the way it looks. Mm-hmm. And it's nice for us, for us who are developing technologies working with these machines. So we know, okay, the machine looks like this, this is the limits, this is what it can do, this is what it's capable of, and then we can play with it and we can teach it, program it, and make it actually being useful. Because the machine as such, just a machine, depends on how you use the machine and what you teach the machine, or what you tell the machine to do.
So the machines become smarter after Robotvin, or what is the transform of knowledge to the robots?
Yes, so smarter, but most importantly, they become more useful. So the robotic arm is a very useful piece of machine, but you need to give it the task and explain it the task and make it do what you want from it. And if you are not able to like configure it and like teach it the proper way or like program it, which would be the classical way how people do it nowadays, then you cannot like fully exploit the potential of the machine.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do and what we allow people is to like fully exploit the potential the machine has by like giving them tools how to teach the machine to do things they need.
So are you replacing people with robots? Is this the Asimov revolution coming true or?
No. We like, and it's actually interesting. We react on the need that there is lack of workforce in the manufacturing industry, and the manufacturing industry wants to automate. And like, I'm following the trends of International Federation of Robotics. Each year they release what will be the 5 top trends in robotics, what mm-hmm. people will be working on. And this year, for the first time, they said robots are here to react on the lack of workforce. Mm-hmm. So like, really, like we can say no, it's not like replacing humans and taking off their jobs, but it's about replacing the big gap we have on the job market, because nowadays people, and especially in Europe, they don't want to do the heavy, dirty, manual tasks anymore. They shouldn't, because it's really like even unhealthy, toxic, and so on. And that's why we have the robots there.
So how does the knowledge transfer between human and robot looks like?
So in our case, we have a tool, we have a device that helps you to show the robot the operation you would like to automate. So imagine you are a painter and you work in a paint shop. So your daily job is you have the spraying gun with the paint, you have a product you want to paint. You go, you paint it from up to bottom, left to right, like you know exactly what movements you should do, from which distance and so on. And like this all know-how and knowledge you have just in your head, with our tools, you can basically digitalize that, because what mm-hmm. we do is we record your movements when you do your job. And when we have that, when we have the data recorded, we can generate the robotic programs based on that, so that the robotic programs eventually are like done with the knowledge and experience the manual worker has.
And you mentioned in one of your interviews that this is like one of the sector, manufacturing assembly lines, one of the sector that is most difficult to automate. What are the barriers in there?
It's the know-how mm-hmm. and the experience of the people. So like we very often, like the classical automation sees the problem, like we have people we need to get rid of and we need to replace them with robots. But what they forgot is that with the people, you lose also mm-hmm. the know-how and the experience. And sometimes like it's really like you can also look in like other companies and you find their people who are like so crucial for the like operations of the company. Like they gather the know-how in their head, and if they would be gone, you mm-hmm. would really lose like quite a high value. So that's what people forgot when they were like, okay, let's replace humans with the robots. And that's what we know, that you cannot forget, and you need to keep the people, otherwise you would lose the know-how.
And do you have maybe some example of that? Like when company got rid of the crucial person and then they were in trouble?
Yeah, like it's happening to us quite often. So like companies call us and they're like, oh, we have this programmer and he did these like 3 programs and now he's retiring. And like, who is taking over that guy? Like who will be then doing the programs for us? And like, yeah, well, it's a challenge, right? And so, yeah, like we need to somehow replace like all the knowledge, and the guy is like retiring and what now? So this is the point when the people realize it's not just about like programming, but it's about like capturing the know-how and the best practices they have in the companies. And then we come and we say, okay, so like this device will help you to actually like transfer your mind into the robot program. And they're like, okay, that's really cool. Or like another example, sometimes people also use it as like a communication mean. Mm-hmm. So you would have a programmer who can like code the robot, and you would have the painter or the worker who cannot code. And like how they do it today, like they sit next to each other and the one is like talking to the other. It's like, I would do it more like more further from that. And mm-hmm. then like more towards left and they like talk, which is like crazy inefficient, right? And with our tool, the painter can go and it's like, I would do it like this. And then that person, the programmer, can like take the generated program. It's like, okay, now I see.
I understand it's faster, but your claim is like you can do it in 3 steps and 1 minute. Is it truly doable in 1 minute?
Yes, I like that you are like skeptical.
Bad.
That means that you already know something about robotics. Of course, it is possible in different cases. In different cases, it's not. It depends on what is your use case, what you are trying to automate. If you are trying to automate like spray painting of a piece of car, like the whole program, like the whole operation will take more than 10 minutes. So obviously, no, like we cannot do it that fast.
Still fast though.
But what we were trying to say is like that the process can be like that fast that it's like in a different category, you know, like mm-hmm. It's not like you are sitting there for days like typing the robot positions in the program, or like jogging with the PlayStation kind of thing to like with the robot from one point to another, which really takes like days and weeks. But with us you are like on a different scale, so like it's just like very smooth and very, very easy.
Speaking of the device, I noticed, because I've seen it, that it looks a bit like a gun. It is a bit like, we will show it in a video. Did you ever had a problem with the gun resemblance, maybe outside, you know, United States?
Luckily not. Like, actually, like there is a really nice story connected to that. Like, our mechanical designer who works for us, like when he applied for the position, he thought that we are really like developing like guns. And since he's like a proper mechanical designer, he is interested in the design of like that complex thing as gun can be. So he was like, yeah, let's apply it, it's gonna be fun. Then he found out we're doing something a little different, but like he claims that he still likes the job, so I hope it's fine.
Different kind of defense. Yeah.
Yeah, but well, it's the product looks like a gun because our first segment we focused on was the spray painting, mm-hmm. and the tools that the painters use are actually spray guns. So like the tools they are used to use look like guns. And we wanted to make the device, again, now we are by the acceptance of the technology, we wanted to make our mm-hmm. device as close to yes. what they use on a daily basis as possible. So that's why the shape.
So there's a little barrier, and not so much. Do people, like then the workers that, you know, are used to use the spray gun, mm-hmm. now are using a robotic arm or a robot fin, mm-hmm. How are they reacting? Do they like it? Like when they don't even see the colors coming out of the gun?
Yeah, that's a good point. Like we actually have like several options of the product, like several variations, and like when we really want to have like authentic experience for the workers, they can take our sensors and they can attach it to the spray gun they actually use in their production. So like then it's not like a standalone device by us that looks like a gun, but it's like a sensors that you can attach to the gun that you use normally. And then you have the advantage of actually seeing how the paint is like coming out of the gun, how it's sticking to the product, and like you really have like real authentic experience, which is like the best what you can mm-hmm. you can actually get. So like compared to like virtual reality, for example, you can also program robots in virtual reality, but it's just so like weird, you know, it's just weird, like you have glasses and you have something that you cannot touch, it's not so it's like this is difficult to accept, but
yeah, still in the offline world, step yes. by step, yeah.
Yes, so like we really try to be like as close to what the people are used to. Like, I think that mostly they react like, okay, that's fun, interesting, okay. I'm gonna try. So, like, they are, I would say, like, surprisingly open to trying this stuff. What I think it means that they themselves understand that the job that they are doing is not, like, the dream job of the world. Because, as I said, like, it's difficult, it's demanding, it's, like, heavy, it's, like, physically challenging. You need to wear the protective mask and everything. So I don't think that they would be like protecting their job like until the end of their life, because they themselves know the best that the job is not like a dreamy one.
You optimize robots for manufacturing, but here there is a lot of lobbying and claims that we don't want to be the manufacturing country, the assembly line continent. We want to be the brains, right? Moskovnane, Montovnane in Czech. What do you think about that? How do you feel about those claims when you are trying to optimizing this?
You know, it's again maybe the question about how much added value is there in the operation. And even like manufacturing operations can have a lot of added value if they are done in a smart way and if there is some like unique know-how part of it. So like Europe, we are really good in like high quality products, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you make sure that the manufacturing fits to the requirement of the high quality product? It's not straightforward. It's not super easy. So then, like, if you offshore it somewhere like abroad where you don't have much control over it, you can lose the quality. So the reason why we like try to make manufacturing like happening again in the Europe is partially that we want to like maintain the high quality of the products. And then like maintaining the high quality of the products is not just manufacturing, but it's like manufacturing with some like thinking behind it. So you can optimize a lot in mm-hmm. how you manufacture stuff. And for being able to do that, you need to know how, you need to experience, and you need the smart people behind it. So I think it really makes sense to onshore the manufacturing back to Europe.
Which is a trend that we see, right?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, also for different reasons. Also for reasons of like politics and all the instability that we have mm-hmm. Currently in the world, like in the supply chain. Like COVID also was like a big lesson in that sense. Politics, the war, like energy crisis as well. So like there are multiple reasons mm-hmm. why we want to onshore. But even the first one, like that, if it's onshore, it's here. We can optimize and we can have the control over it, and we can still go towards not like quantity, but towards the high quality.
RobotWin is hardware, as we mentioned, but it is very big pain to fundraise for early stage hardware startup in Europe, and I think especially in the CEE. Did you even try fundraising, or did you just from the point one decided to go with bootstrapping and public grants?
I think what might be different for like us as a representative of like hardware based startup, there is a high risk at the start, and the investors are asking for some type of validation, and like they want to see the proof that there is market traction and we have users and everything, and which is fair. In order to get first users, you need to develop the product up to at least MVP. In order to develop the product, you need some investment, and if the investors are not gonna dare to give you the investment, you are going out and trying to bootstrap. What amount of resources you need to develop MVP of a hardware product is way higher than amount of resources you would need for a software product. So it makes sense. Like, I understand that. Also, at the very start, we all came from academia. We didn't have experience with like the VC world. And we saw opportunities to get like publicly funded. So we went that way. And I think like looking back, we didn't try fundraising like private money. Looking back, I think that we wouldn't succeed.
Mm-hmm.
So going the grant way was the right way. However, it took us like one whole year to get the funds. So like one whole year of RobotWin history was like just preparing for there's gonna be the grant, writing application, like fingers crossed that we will get it. And after the year of like waiting, we were able to continue developing the technology.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's a different kind of fundraising, and RobotWin swims in the startup support system like a ship in the money sea, because you went to EYT Jumpstarter and, you know, all the way to Horizon Europe and now EYC, well, you know, new abbreviation, congratulations on that, and also Technology Incubation by Czech Invest and Technology Agency of the Czech Republic. Would you think that you could ever make it without this help?
We would be definitely doing it, but we would be doing it differently and mm-hmm. way more slowly, definitely. And looking at the competition and how the market evolves, I think that it might, it is possible it would kill us. Like we wouldn't survive the early phase, because the market is moving really fast, competition is also moving really fast, and if we wouldn't have this support, we would have to go super slowly.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's the answer. But like, there is quite a lot of programs you can benefit from, but what I would like to say is like, the amount of support you get through them is not as high as there can be like one pre-seed investment round elsewhere in Europe or in the US. So like, it's like adding crown to crown to like get the budget you need to move forward.
Paper to paper.
Yes, and we took that path. Luckily, we were quite successful, and definitely like without that, I'm not sure if I would be sitting here.
Grants means a lot of paperwork. Do you have any idea how many reports have you had to send?
Yeah, well, you would have to ask Dita, like my colleague who is responsible for that. She's doing that really great. Like she's doing a great job in that.
Kudos to her.
Yeah. Well, I think I remember last time she told me she handed in the last report and she was like, wow, that was like my diploma thesis. So like as difficult as can be, yes. Like
and pretty long, I assume.
And pretty long, and like you need to also like translate what we are doing into the language of people who are like then reviewing it, so that they like understand that what we do is actually a progress. Yes, there is a lot to that, but it's like free money, so it's some kind of trade-off that you need to make on your side. Like, is mm-hmm. it worth it for me, or is it not? And also, like, the more you are into it, like, the more easy it gets for you.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, like, for example, the EIC grant that we got, which is like way bigger ticket than any national grant that we got before. They decided they will give the money in a lump sum way, which means mm-hmm. here's the money. I don't need any accounting, any like invoices, anything. Like keep track for yourself, for your like Czech national law system and everything, but you don't need to report to us.
Like way higher trust, you mean?
Yes, because what they found is like the administration costs of on both sides, startup sides and their side, are way, way higher than what is the risk of someone like misbehaving or like gaming the system. And that's amazing. Like I'm really happy that they went that way, because it makes our life way, way easier.
Yeah, I can imagine. But the Czech startup ecosystem support still remains very paper related. What do you think is harder to, as an early stage startup, to fill all the administration and paperwork for the Czech grants, or fundraise as an early stage deep tech hardware startup?
I think the first is more about like being patient and like also like taming your ego a bit, like being in compliance with everything what the people ask for, basically. Mm-hmm. And the later, like fundraising with the investors, it's more like a risky game. So like
mm-hmm.
you need luck, you need to meet the right people, and if you don't meet the right people, it can be really like a sad story at the end. So I would say the first one is like more annoying but safer.
Nice.
The second one can be like, you can be really lucky, it can be great, but it can also go south.
You also went through acceleration and the Czechoslovak commercial bank, ČSOB, started. And the program, why did a deep tech hardware startup join a bank acceleration program?
Yeah, so like when we were, it was at the very early beginning mm-hmm. of Robotmin. So we already knew that we will get the budget to develop further our product. But that was like, there was like not much like business support or mentoring support with the money. It was like just the money. And we said, by that time, we were just the three of us, the co-founders. And we said, we need someone to like mentor us, to like lead us through the process, so that we increase the chances that we use the money in an efficient way. You know, like, we didn't want to risk that, like, we will get the money, but people don't know what to do with that. Like, and I'm exaggerating a little bit, but, like, we wanted to have a mentors. And we did, like, a benchmark of, like, what different accelerators there are. And the started was, like, fitting the best for us at that stage. Maybe, like, misunderstanding what people may have. They do not focus on finance only. Not at all. Like, they focus on anyone who has a good startup idea, good innovation idea, and who is willing to learn, who is willing to, like, push it further, and who is willing to, like, listen to the advices and the know-how then that they can get. So that was the reason why we applied.
And what was the best thing that it brought?
Like, for us, it was actually, like, the introduction to the Czech startup scene. So, like, we, like, the first fund that we got, like, the first grant was, like, European level. So, and we also, like, me and Ladislav, the other co-founder, we worked before in Munich. So we were not too integrated in the startup scene here in Czech Republic. So it introduced us into that. And, like, we still keep the connection from that. And it's already, like,
That's
2 or 3 years ago. And what was, like, a small perk, but, like, really important for us, they let you use their office space. And I know, like, it sounds stupid, but somehow it gave us the form, you know, like, it was, now it was, like, formal. We have a company, we have an office to meet, you know, like, and then we had, like, office hours, like, we meet every day, and, you know, like, it really, like, helped us to, like, jump into the routine of, this is the company, it's real, and it's, like, going on.
Love it. Like, introduction of the structure. And yeah, it's a pain. Like, try renting an office in the Prague as an early stage startup with, you know, tight budget. Good luck. There's really a lot in Europe now, some equity-free programs to support startups. Because they're being as a crucial economy and crucial for the tech future and business future. Understand that. But there is also a lot of criticism of this, like, free money giving away. What would you say to that criticism?
Like, how would it look like here if there wasn't this support? Okay, so US, they always give it as an example, but they also have some kind of history behind them.
Course.
And it also started with, like, like, not government, but, like, not, like, public money being invested heavily. And now they are where they are, fine. But we stand different. Also, like, European companies, individuals, and, like, people with money, they invest very often in the US. So, like, how can we compete with that when even, like, people based here who maybe even, like, came to the wealth they have through, like, the European culture, European laws and everything, like, they earned the money in here, they are not willing to invest in here. They rather invest in the US companies. Like, it's just, you cannot compare that. And I personally believe that, like, if we want to be competitive towards, like, US or, like, the foreign markets, we need to change this, like, imbalance. And that's why now we have this, like, equity free and, like, supporting programs to fund and support the crucial technologies that we believe will have a good impact on the economy and society. So, like, makes sense from my perspective. Also, if you put it into context, like, what was the process and the history of, like, how the Silicon Valley startup scene arised, it's just how it is. Like, probably it's gonna also change. Like, maybe there is, like, some kind of progress, and, like, in 5 to 10 years it will be easy here to fundraise private money for deep tech hardware startup.
maybe, but also, you know, the biggest tech companies in United States still rely heavily on public money and you know, governmental grants, yes, etc. So maybe the critics should know that as well. You studied and worked all over the world, and you say that the startup mindset is more conservative here in Prague versus, I don't know, Singapore or Munich. What is the weirdest reaction of Czech academic you received when you said you wanted to found your own company?
Yeah, I think that I didn't really talk about that too much with them to like prevent myself from any like weird reactions. No, I think that it's about the different objectives the people have. So like our academic system is heavily based on like publications, papers, and like scientific conferences. That's what they get the money from, and that's what prestige is for them. So when you say like, okay, nice, I'm rather interested in like the deployment, like the implementation phase, like taking that what we researched, it's already like enough, I want to put it into industry, I want to do like the work in like implementing that. It's not too appealing for them, because they are raised in the way that like publications and like more scientific progress is the right thing. So I believe that they look at us like someone who like dropped the promising academic career for something which is like not too fancy and not too good looking. And that's the difference in the mindset. So mm-hmm. like I met a lot of like students or like colleagues who studied in Munich, for example, and there is different. Like they are more like pushed towards the entrepreneurship. So okay, you have idea, it looks good, there is a prototype, nice, try it. Like try to implement mm-hmm. it, try to find the pilot users and try to push it further. Doesn't work, never mind. Like you can also try something else later on, but like it's always worth trying. And we don't have that here. So that's why I believe that a lot of people just like cannot really understand why we are doing it, because like it's not appealing to them. But I see, like for me, this is what is like fulfilling in your job, when like what you work on has like immediate impact in the industry.
And yet you could be, you know, PhD, docent, whatever. And yeah. Instead you have a startup.
Yeah. I mean, we need both.
Poor you.
We need both, right? Like we need people who are moving forward the science, and then we need people who implement it. But I think that we should like mutually pay a little bit more respect to each other, so that like we also make it clear like we understand we need each other, and like it's like a system that should be somehow like connected and should work together.
What do you think is the next big thing in robotics? Once you said large behavior models, how will that affect robotics?
Yeah. Well, like that's something what people are working on already. Doesn't really appear in the industry yet. So large behavioral models are like large language models, just that the output of the AI system is not text, but it's some action. Mm-hmm. So like in the robotic world, it would be like, instead of like answering your question, the robot would like go and do some action, like execute some kind of command. And like it would, for example, look at the scene, and it would understand that like this glass needs to be emptied and put into the dishwasher. So it would go and do it. If I believe it's the next big thing, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Like from all my experience like working in RobotWin, there is like really big gap in what is like the fancy state of the art we are presented in like conferences, and what the industry
I think it's not just
is.
Robotics.
Absolutely, yes. So maybe there will be like more smaller things on the way before we reach the large behavioral models, but it's definitely a, like interesting area to explore. But yeah, that would be for longer discussion.
Yeah, that's let's take it step by step. There's not a lot of female founders and even less CTOs. Have you ever been called B-world?
Not in the face.
Not in the face.
I don't know if it's good or bad, but definitely being like exception in a sense brings some kind of like reserved approach from mm-hmm. some people that I meet. I can understand it. Am I happy about it? Not. Like what I think is the way to change it is not like educate people to show them, hey, like even someone who you would not expect being in the role can do the role very well. I think what we should do instead is just to like bring more women into that role, so that like we balance the...
It's not such a painted bird.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's easier and actually like even more like helpful for us as a society. So I would work towards that instead of like trying to educate people. Because, you know, like everyone has some kind of unconscious biases. And I'm getting really tired like trying to like explain people that they can change their mind. So I rather work on the mission like to get more of us into the industry and into the business.
And do you see that succeeding?
Well,
maybe it's too soon.
Yeah, it's too soon. Like what I'm like personally quite proud of, like I think that we as RobotFin, like a tech startup led by like at least like having one girl in the founders team, we are getting way more female like applicants to join our team, and this is super cool. So I really think that there is some kind of like higher chances that they feel like, okay, let's try, I'll apply, and we will see.
Yeah, this correlation seems like causation. Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, that's good for you. And speaking of biases and stereotypes, is there a stereotype about robots that you would like people to drop?
Yes. I don't want to sound like a total hater, but I'm really like getting triggered by all the like robots cooking coffee and folding clothes and people being so like excited about that. It's like, come on, like, is it really like the biggest pain in the world you really wish to be solved? Like, coffee, like, we have coffee machines.
Come and on. You can just, you know,
click the button. Yeah, yes, wow. I know. So, like, no, I'm like exaggerating. Like, I understand that it like brings the topic of robotics more into the like common public and like everyday life, which is good because then people have like, again, like better acceptance of the technology. But sometimes it just creates like really weird like misunderstandings in people's minds, because then they're like, I've seen this like humanoid robot doing a coffee, so like you now tell me that like there are like painters and welders like doing manual work. No, it's not possible, like this and that doesn't fit. So that can also harm a little bit the scene. Also then talking to the investors might be difficult, because they are also like fed by the pictures of like humanoids in the Tesla factories like doing really fancy stuff and like folding clothes, and then they don't believe us that the industry,
that this is the standard
this
now.
Is the standard, yeah. So yeah, I wish we have like less folding clothes and like more like manufacturing robots being shown to the public.
Which is your what is your most favorite manufacturing robot?
Oh, I don't know. I like them all.
You like them all. I know the orange ones. So yeah, I would pick those. And my last question for you, Maggie, is what is the weirdest food you've ever eaten?
Okay, good. I'm quite like easygoing person and open-minded. I'm like okay with a lot of stuff. So like I go, I try. When we still were students, like we had quite some time to travel, so I really enjoyed like visiting different like places in the world and like different cultures. I remember one story. So like me and our friends were in Vietnam or Indonesia, I don't know now. And my friend has the like gluten diet, so she cannot eat gluten stuff. And you know, like in Indonesia, you order food, you have no idea what's inside, right? And there was this like we always said like no noodles and stuff. And there was this like thing, we called it like internally, we called it like Chinese sausage. And we were like, Chinese sausage is quite good, right? And then we found out it's like seitan, which is pure gluten.
Aye, aye.
I was like, oopsie. So like that was really like no one had idea, because like you really just like accept what it is and you don't like ask too much. But then we were like, okay, maybe better be careful.
And was she all right?
Yeah, she was way more skeptical, so like she didn't eat it before because she knows already.
So gluten-full sausage, just a disclaimer, I do think that those robots that bring you food and take your plates, I kind of like consider them cute and useful.
When they have the kitten eyes, especially,
yes.
Right?
Yes, and they're cute, they play music and I like them.
Me too.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Maggie, so much for being with us today, and thank you for coming.
Thank you as well.
Being honest with us.
It was really nice.